Welcome back to the FKT Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today's episode is brought to you by John G. John G makes trail running essentials backed by a 5-year run everywhere guarantee designed to go further. Perfect for your next FKT. Shop now at johng.com with code FKT for 10% off. Today, we're chatting with Rachel Boehm, who is not only new to FKTs, but also to longer distance runs in general. Despite this, she's absolutely crushing high altitude mountain FKTs. Join us to hear about her 3 FKT spree on 3 continents earlier this year. Thank you so much, Rachel, for coming on the podcast today. I'm really excited to chat with you about some of these big FKTs you did earlier this year.
Thank you for having me.
So when I first reached out to you, it was about the Namche Bazaar to Everest Base Camp round trip. But then as I started looking at it, I realized that over a 6-week span, you did 3 really big high altitude mountain FKTs, including the Women's Ascent on Aconcagua and also the Kilimanjaro Summit Circle. So I would love it if you just maybe like introduced us to that project and like, was it your intent to do all 3 of these in a row? How did that unfold? Why you picked Aconcagua to start, et cetera. Just like maybe just a whole introduction to that.
Yeah, well, it just kind of happened that I kept finding myself in these extraordinary circumstances. My partner was doing the FKT for Aconcagua and the long one. And so we were there. We had been up in Chile in the Atacama Desert for a couple weeks before that. And I had never done an FKT before. I really enjoy being up high, and I just wanted to see what I could do on Aconcagua, and that kind of opened the door for me when I recognized what I was able to do, and I wanted to do more.
That's really awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about what that experience on Aconcagua was like? Because, I mean, this is a pretty big, serious mountaineering objective, and did you have previous high-altitude mountaineering experience, like, going into this? Because, I mean, I feel like going into a big high altitude mountain and also doing it in an FKT style, like that's a really tremendous like leap if you hadn't done anything like this before.
Yeah, thank you. I've been climbing mountains for a few years. I haven't ever done anything that big before, but we had been in Chile for probably 3 weeks, sleeping and living quite high. And we were in this beautiful land of like 6,000 meter mountains. So I got to do a lot of climbing on some pretty technical terrain out there.
What was the route like that you took?
So on Aconcagua, we went from Mulas, which is the base camp, all the way up to the summit. So usually I think people do it in about 3 days and sleep at like different high camps, and we knocked it all out at once. We got up early and were able to make it all the way to the summit.
And what was your time for that?
My time for that was a really good question. 7 hours and 58 minutes.
That's amazing.
From Mulas to the summit. Thank you.
Were you like, were there any weather? Like, did you have to hang out at base camp and wait for a weather window? Or were you just like really lucky that you showed up and you were just like, oh, it's a perfect day? What was the weather like?
The weather, it was really cold. We were lucky at the time of year that we were there. It was like the very end of the season. And there were probably about 5 really, really good weather days. There was about this hour before dawn where like the sun had already risen, but we were kind of in this little dip. And it was the coldest I've ever been in my life. I was so cold.
I've heard that about Aconcagua, that it's just like brutally cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did you hang out at the summit, or did you just basically turn around and come right back down?
I hung out at the summit and ate a granola bar and enjoyed the view.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
And then came back down.
It was just like a few weeks later, you were on Kilimanjaro.
Yes.
Doing the summit circle. So, I mean, was that already in your head, or was that something you got back down to base camp and you're like, what's the next continental summit I can go do an FKT on? You know?
Yeah, again, it was just... you know, being really lucky at the time when we were on Aconcagua, I know I wasn't thinking about Killy and we hadn't really talked about it yet. And Tyler had done his FKT and he was like, okay, we've done this. I'm going to go do Killy. Like, let's find something for you to do just to see what else you can do. So we found that route and tried it out.
That's awesome. So I mean, I think most of our listeners are probably familiar with Kili like as a peak, but I was really intrigued to see the summit circle. So can you kind of describe what the summit circle route is like for those who maybe have never been to Kilimanjaro?
Yeah, it was really, really amazing and cool to get to. You know, you start from like the lower base camp and you hit the summit, then you come back down and then you go all the way around. So I like hit the summit just at sunrise and then came back down and went down this big scree field and then went around the mountain. I guess it would be counterclockwise. And it was just so insanely beautiful to get to see the mountain from all these different angles that a lot of people don't get to see because there's like this standard route that people take on Kilimanjaro. So it was really special to get to see all these different angles and all these different like topographies and the way that the mountain kind of moves and changes. It was really, really beautiful.
And what was the distance for that?
The distance for that. That was at that point, that was the farthest I had ever gone. I just kept going further with these FKTs. So this was 50K.
Okay.
And about 3,500 meters of climbing total.
Wow. That's massive.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you?
That one took me, it was a long, long day, 17 hours and 48 minutes.
What were the logistics like for that? Because I know Kilimanjaro is pretty heavily regulated and permitted. Did you have to hire guides? Did you have a problem finding a guide that was going to keep up with you for this? Like, how did that work?
It was very heavily regulated. And we did have a lot of difficulty finding guides that could keep up with us. We had an issue where we were working with this company that said that they had guides that could keep up with us and they couldn't. So that ended up being a problem. But for the day that I did the FKT, we were, because we were already permitted to be on the mountain, it was, and we were like starting and stopping in the same place, that made it much easier.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for people who are planning to go there to do Kilimanjaro as like an, either as an FKT or just to climb the mountain?
Just to climb the mountain, be prepared for a lot of changes in weather. Like it goes from, you know, when you're low down, you're basically at sea level and it's really hot and you're in the jungle. And then, you know, as you continue to go up, it just gets colder and colder and colder. So bringing a lot of layers is really important.
How did the weather affect your FKT? Like, were you, I mean, that was a lot of climbing and descending. So
yes, it was.
Yes. So were you going between like big temperature ranges or was it staying relatively consistent for you?
There was one part that got pretty hot where we were pretty low down and it was in kind of like this high deserty wasteland and we were right in the sun and that was quite hot. So it was, you know, like trying to figure out with these little backpacks how to take a bunch of like coats and like a layer of pants off and my hats and my mittens. And like, I was shoving them in all kinds of like pockets and places. And I'm sure I looked like a giant Michelin man.
was Aconcagua, did you feel like that was like the right amount? Like was the acclimatization like to altitude, did that carry over? Cause you were, it was like over a month later that you were on Kilimanjaro.
I think it did carry over pretty well. We had spent a good bit of time up high. And then we went to Colombia for like a week to chill at the beach and then went to Africa. And we spent about, I think we had been up high at the base camp for about a week when I did the FKT.
Okay. So you went up there and kind of just hung out to regain your altitude acclimatization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just going up and down to the summit every day.
Oh, wow.
It was really great.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many times did you end up summiting Kilimanjaro during this?
Three.
And so the next FKT in this like 6 week span was Namche Bazaar. So was it again like where you're on Kilimanjaro and you're like, well, what can I do next? Or had you kind of hatched this whole plan after Aconcagua?
No, we were still just like flying by the seats of our pants at that point. And I think Tyler and I were both tired at that point, and we both love trekking. And he had been to Nepal before and I hadn't. And we were like, okay, I feel like we need a vacation after all of the, you know, climbing and FKTs and stuff. So we decided to go trekking in the Himalaya and do the the three passes mm-hmm. there. We ended up making it four by adding a little lump over Lopache. And, you know, he just happened to mention, hey, there's this really cool FKT that you should do while we're here, and I figured I would try it. The worst thing that would happen is I would get tired and stop.
Right. And did he do it with you?
He did.
Because I saw it was like a supported effort. And then I think it was like you stopped at like the little tea houses along the way.
Yeah, we did stop at tea houses along the way for these really delicious Nepali digestive cookies.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So can you, for those listeners that don't haven't been to Nepal or aren't familiar with it, can you describe what this route was like? Because this is not a mountain route. You're not going up Everest. You're going just to the base camp. So can you talk a little bit about like where you started and what the route was like to get up there?
Yeah, it was totally different from Kilimanjaro and Aconcagua because you pass through all of these little towns along the way, and Kilimanjaro and Aconcagua, like at that point, you're in, you know, essentially a desert. Like it's very high, it's very barren. There aren't a whole lot of other people around. There isn't access to a lot of facilities. And being in Nepal and in the Khumbu Valley, we were going through all of these little tiny towns with little tea houses where you can stop and get snacks. And there were a lot more people, and there were a lot of yaks and a lot of dogs along the trail. And you just, instead of it being just one mountain, you're just surrounded by these insanely beautiful, massive mountains. Like everywhere I looked, it was just like a lot of wowing. I think we took a lot of videos on the GoPro, and every single one either starts or ends with one of us going, wow.
It sounds stunning. It's a region I would like to go to that I have not yet been to.
Yes, please go. It's amazing.
Yeah, I will get there someday. So what was, you kind of mentioned the dogs and the yaks. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the wildlife you encountered? And I think you called them yakic jams, like
oh yeah, some yakic jams. Yeah, yeah. There were, you know, places where the path is pretty narrow and rocky, and there would just be these long trains of yaks taking supplies up to various towns and up to Everest base camp. So sometimes we would get stuck behind a yak train, and you know, you just kind of have to go at the pace of the yaks, or you can try to, if there's a scrambly part, you can try to kind of scramble around them. But there were a lot of yaks.
And what's the average pace of a yak?
I have no idea. It was a little bit slower than I was going.
Okay, well, that's not too bad. It wasn't like they were going dramatically slower. I know that like when I've gone to the Grand Canyon, that's always like kind of a thing. There's like the mule trains going up and down. Mm-hmm. And like, I think mules are probably smaller than yaks. I've never seen a yak in person, but it's still very hard to like squeeze past the mules. You kind of just have to like wait.
Yeah, it is hard to squeeze past them. The yaks are very big.
Right. You mentioned the dogs. Like, were the dogs generally friendly, or were they scary? Or
they were awesome. It was actually a totally unique experience for me. Like culturally, Nepali people care for stray animals. So even being in a city like Kathmandu, where it is a, you know, developing country, and there's a bigger feral dog population, but the dogs are like all fat and happy.
That's awesome.
And so well loved. And you know, that translates into the mountain culture, where it's like the dogs are just happy to see you, and they want to know what you're doing, and they want to know where you're going. So there was one small town that we went through where we had 9 dogs that stayed with us from like the start of the town all the way to like whatever the border of their territory is, and they were just running with us,
right,
and happy to see us. It wasn't scary at all. It was a really great positive experience.
That's awesome. You didn't come home with a new pet?
It was close. There was one little guy that stayed with us for about 20 kilometers.
Wow, that's a dedicated dog.
He was so dedicated until we got to a suspension bridge that went over the river, and there he was like, you know what, I'm good.
Yeah,
it's been real, I'm gonna go home now.
It's like, I liked you guys, but not that much.
Yep, that bridge was too scary.
Oh my goodness. Could you talk a little bit more about like the cultural aspects of this run? Because like you said, you're like in all these little towns and stuff like that. So I imagine it'd be quite the cultural experience as opposed to like a mountain experience.
Yeah, it was very different culturally, and people are just so kind and welcoming and excited. You know, I'm sure that they're at this point, they're very used to tourists coming through the town on their way up to Everest Base Camp. So they were just excited to talk to us. They wanted to know where we were from and where we were going and how long we were there and what route we were taking. And I think we really got to experience the culture during our trek more than the actual FKT, because then we were actually staying in the tea houses and eating a lot of dalbat and drinking delicious tea. And yeah, I can't say enough about how like kind people were. It gets, you know, because people like live and work at these tea houses. So it's almost like you're in someone's home and they're just very happy to have you there.
That's awesome. What was the weather like for this? Like, I'm not really familiar at all with like the weather patterns in the Himalaya.
Yeah, it was cold. Like Aconcagua was cold, but it was a different kind of cold because you got a break from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you went up high and it was cold, and then you could come back down to base camp and it was still cold, but it was less cold. And in Nepal, you know, we were sleeping indoors, but we were sleeping in our puffy jackets and our sleeping bags with hats. And, you know, you could see your breath laying in bed at night.
Wow. What was the temperature about like during the day, like at the hottest part of the day?
I have no idea.
Like, were you running with your puffy on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely running in the puffy for a lot of it.
I mean, how did that impact your run? Like when it's cold, like I do not run very fast. Like, did it help you or slow you down?
That's a really good question. I think that I was going at a reasonable enough pace to be comfortable, where I didn't feel like I was going to die of cold, but I also wasn't like sweating so much that I was getting wet, which would then make me colder.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to find kind of a nice, happy medium pace. And then I had a plethora of hot hands.
Yes, those are indispensable. Like, yeah,
they really are. You know, I figured out the perfect combination for me was to have two in each mitten, like one for my thumbs and then one for my fingers.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That
was really nice.
That's a good tip. I'm going to have to remember that. A lot of times I put one on the back of my hand in the mitten and then one in the palm. But yeah, then the thumb gets cold. So,
yeah. I would just like shove it in the thumb pocket and then stick my thumb in.
Right. That makes sense. Can you talk maybe a little bit about like the logistics like of the FKT, but also just like you said, you did, you know, a four pass trek beforehand. Like, what were some of the logistics like on that? I mean, did you obviously like Kilimanjaro was super heavily permitted. Like, did you feel like you needed permits and guides and things like that for what you did in Nepal? Or was this a little bit more like open?
Nepal was definitely more open. I know that they recently passed a law stating that you need a guide for trekking, but we were able to get in before that law had been passed. So we did need permits to be in the park, of course. But then once we were in, we were in, and we had a map and we had GPS and we were able to just use that to plan our trek. And that was great.
Was the navigation fairly straightforward, or did you struggle with that a little?
The trails are very well marked and very well traveled. You know, unlike Hilly, where we saw no one, we saw lots of people all the time. So, you know, I think there was only that day that we added in the extra pass was the day that we got a little turned around. But other than that, navigating was quite easy.
Are you predominantly like above tree lines, pretty open landscape, so it's really easy to identify the features like and compare them to the map, or are you like in the jungle at all?
In Nepal, no, there were definitely a lot of trees to a point. I think there's like that like 4,800 meter mark is kind of the mark where we stop seeing things growing outside of like the occasional little scrubby shrubs. So once we got up high, it was pretty easy.
Did you have a specific time goal, or were you just kind of like, we're just going to go and, you know, see what happens type of thing?
I did have a time goal. There is a pizza place in Namche Bazaar that has really delicious, wonderful pizza. And my goal was to be able to get back before they closed and have pizza and a beer.
And were you able to get back to your pizza and beer?
Yes. Yes, I was. Yay. It was amazing. We got back 2 hours before they closed.
That must be really good pizza to like really motivate that.
It was so motivating. When things got hard, I was just like, pizza, 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 pizza. Because we'd been in so many countries, you know, where you don't really get American style pizza. And there's this one place that had American style pizza, and it was so motivating for me.
That's funny. It's funny to me, like, what we will do for, like, food rewards sometimes. I'm like,
oh yeah.
We're basically still just toddlers.
Yeah, absolutely. I never underestimate the power of pizza or ice cream. Those are my two big motivators for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share about any of these FKTs that I didn't already ask about?
Well, I think one of the things that's important to note is that, you know, this is all new to me. Like, I ran my first 50K back in October. You know, I'm not a professional athlete. I'm not sponsored. This is something that I really, really love the mountains. And I've just happened to be able to be in these extraordinary circumstances where I've been able to push my body and really explore what I'm able to do physically as just, like, you know, a pretty average human being. And I hope that the things that I've done inspire other women to get out there and push it and see what they can do, because, you know, we're just so much stronger and more capable than we give ourselves credit for.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it sounds like you're really new to FKTs and ultras and this whole thing in general, but it sounds like you're pretty hooked on it. So what's next? Do you have any plans that you're willing to share with our audience?
I am definitely hooked at this point. For future plans, I'm hoping to get up into some bigger mountains in the fall.
Just to climb or FKTs or maybe both?
Yeah, Portino Los Dos, a little bit of both, hopefully.
Okay, awesome.
You know, I just want to keep pushing the envelope and see where my body says, okay, we're done.
Right, right. Well, I look forward to following along and seeing where your adventures take you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure talking to you today. So thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I feel really honored. This has been lovely.
Thanks again, Rachel, for coming on the show. You can check out her FKTs on fastestknowntime.com and follow her adventures, as well as her telehealth for runners business at happybody.pt on Instagram. Thanks again to Merrill Test Lab for supporting the show. Be sure to check out their new Skyfire 2 shoe at merrill.com.